Hi, this is Kirk Billingsley of Big Fish Cider Company in Monterey, Virginia, and you are listening to Cider Chat.
Episode 124. Hello, and welcome to Cider Chat. My name is Rhea Wincoller, and I am the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast, where we speak with makers, cider enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. And this week, we are speaking with folks from Big Fish Cider Company based in Monterey, Virginia. That would be Kurt Billingsley and Sarah Simons-Collins. So make sure that cider glass is full, because we're going to be coming back to that chat in just a moment.
Going up, going up, going up.
I'm a firm believer that if I have something good to share, some kind of piece of information, I want to pass it on. And that's a big part of this podcast, is passing on news about Ciderville, not just necessarily in one spot, one country, but around the world. And the one common theme that I hear in my ongoing correspondences with people all over the map, commercial, non-commercial, cider consumers, just people interested in the podcast, is that by listening to this weekly show, they feel connected. They don't feel so alone in their spot of the world. You can bet your bottom dollar that no one is walking into a bar and saying, "What's beer?" or "What's wine?" But they sure as heck are still asking, "What is cider?" So that educational piece is still a long way from that home run hit, where we don't have to be taking our time to educate at the same level that we are currently doing. And that's tiring for folks who are trying to just be discovered as a cidery, or the brand ambassadors who are working for a cidery, or sometimes are the cider makers themselves, probably more often than not are the cider makers themselves. And let's say you're not commercial, you just are someone like me who enjoys cider. Maybe you have celiac disease. You can't have gluten in your diet. There's so many reasons why cider exists in the world for us. That is why staying connected is so darn important. And one of the ways I have been attempting to up my game and increase visibility of cider is by offering cider tours. So I have one going out to Normandy, France in September. And if you even have an inkling of a thought that, well, I'd like to go on that trip, please contact me. And if you want to go on a trip, you can't do it this year, well, help me get this trip off so I could offer it next year. I can't do it without you, Ciderville. You know how that 6 degrees of separation works, where essentially everybody's connected to each other and knows somebody else? Well, I'm counting on you right now to reach out to 5 people that you know could go on this trip. If you are a cidery owner, maybe you want to send a team member. Maybe you know some of your patrons or supporters of your cidery who can attend this. But please don't say, I'm not thinking about it. And hey, thanks, Rhea, do the podcast. I'll just listen next week. This podcast can simply not survive without your support. And I have a hunch that it is important enough to you to see it continue on. And I'm not asking a lot here other than to talk it up and find those people out there who can go on the Totally Cider Tour to Normandy, France. People that you know, if you own a cider bar, tell people, put up a sign, "Hey, there's a cider tour going to Normandy, France. Ask me for more info." If you haven't had the opportunity to go to the website yet and check out the itinerary on this trip, well, allow me to share with you some of the key reasons why I think it's such an amazing opportunity for yourself, or what you might be able to tell those 5 people that you're thinking about right now who would get really good value and would want to go on a trip like this. I mean, first you're going to say, well, you're going to be going with Rhea Wincoller. Like, who is that? Besides producing this podcast and speaking to 15 different countries around the world and the makers there and just about every state in the U.S. I think I have a little bit of information. I won't say I'm an expert, and maybe that's probably one of my best strengths. Is I don't consider myself an expert in cider by any means. So going with curiosity is a hell of a lot of fun. And yes, if you have been listening to this podcast, you know that I do like to have fun and to travel well. I have a lot of experience with that. I have led a lot of groups over my lifetime in many, many different situations. So I feel very confident in doing this because I've spent so much time already in Normandy setting this up. So I'm hoping that you might enjoy or at least convince your friends that Rhea might be a pretty good person to go along with on this trip. And to top it off, we also have a French interpreter and guide who will be going along too, so that it's not all about me, but really the experience. So you could just drop into it. And that's how I like to travel. I like to drop into it and slow the pace down. I mean, we are in Normandy, for goodness sakes. This is a place where you want to just go out and lay down on the grass on a nice day and kick back with a bottle of cider and some cheese and some bread and really experience that exquisite essence of all that you can ever imagine to be in a French countryside. That's what we're going to be doing. So I've really limited the amount of travel time between different destinations. So there's one, you get to travel with me. And two, we also have a full-on French guide who will help you interpret and ask questions to the makers that we'll be meeting along the way. Three, the pace is super, super chill. I mean, a lot of group tours, you have to be up by 7:30 and out, and nobody wants to be drinking cider or Calvados the night before and go anywhere at 7:30 in the morning. Four, the trip takes place the last week of September, which is the perfect time to be there because that is a time when you could reach up into an apple tree or a pear tree and the fruit will come easily off and bite into it right then. And I promise I will not stare. In fact, you'll have plenty of room to be able to be on your own to bite into a peri pear from an ancient pear tree and savor that juice and that terroir. And number five is three main highlights of the trip that you could really look forward to. First one is we get to drink copious amounts of cider, Poiret, Calvados, and Pommeau. And that should be a given on a cider tour, no doubt. But the difference is we are in Normandy, France, drinking copious amounts of these libations. And in that case, it's a whole different ballgame. Because anytime that you go out in the world from this point on, your palate is going to have a really different dimension than most palates out there. It's without a doubt something that one must do if you have a passion for cider. Otherwise, even myself, did I know what Poiret was? Hell no. I needed to go to Normandy to be able to taste that. So when I go judging in like a month from now at Glencap, I'll know what the hell I'm talking about. I know what I'm tasting and I'll be able to decipher it out. You have to drink it, but you have to drink it at the source. And that is exactly what we're doing. Drinking at the source is not going to be traveling 100 miles. We're going to be right in that location where you get to look at the soil, maybe even taste the soil, feel the soil, smell the air, look at the sky, meet the maker, and breathe in Normandy. And two, I am so looking forward to introducing you to world-class cider makers who will greet you like old friends. I mean, it's so different to go to a cidery and on a tour and not necessarily have the maker there. Maybe you will, maybe you won't. And they're having to like leave something else that they're doing. You pay your money and it could be kind of impersonal. It really can. Especially if they're just getting a lot of folks kind of coming through. But this is going to be different. They are going to be expecting us. It's like expecting your friends to come along. And I think there's no better way to travel in the world than to go right into the culture immediately, feeling comfortable, cozy, and safe. And the third highlight that I would like you to consider, and also to tell those five people that you know can go to Normandy, is that we're going to be going to the UNESCO World Heritage Site, Mount St. Michel, which has all those amazing little piers on the top, and there's so much history. I talked a little bit about it last week on episode 123. Well, years ago, it was its own kind of island, and now they built a road out to it, and it's just one of those breathtaking views that has to be on your list to do in your lifetime. Yeah, that is going to be spectacular. I am hoping that you are listening to this podcast before the end of April, like the week it comes out in April 2018, because at the end of the month is when the early bird special ends to put your reservations in. So let's hope that you are a regular listener of this podcast and you listen to it in a timely manner so that you could get those reservations in and I don't have to walk out on a gangplank and decide whether I'm going to make a business decision that could really take me off the air. Please count yourself in if you can, and if you can't, reach out to five people today. There'll be some of the highlights in the show notes if you need some talking points for those friends. When we come back, we're going to be heading into our main chat with Big Fish Cider Company. That time now to grab a glass and have a chat with Kurt Billingsley and Sarah Simon Collins of Big Fish Cider Company, based in Monterey, Virginia. This conversation was pre-recorded at CiderCon 2018 in Baltimore. Virginia's in the house on Cider Chat.
Well, it's nice to meet you too, Rhea. I think a lot of your podcast and enjoy reaching out and hearing the news from Ciderville and hearing the cider makers as well as the other people in the industry. It's wonderful. Monterey, Virginia is about 240 full-time residents that live there, and it's in a county that's only got about 2,400 people in the whole county. It's in the Appalachian Mountains. It's west of the Shenandoah Valley in the Allegheny section of the Appalachian Mountains. And we're about, our orchards are about 2,700 to 3,200 feet in elevation, and the apples are a lot different because of that. And cider making is a lot different. We're lucky to have the ability to get apples that have absolutely no input. What's beyond organic. There's nothing sprayed. We prune, and that's pretty much all we do. The majority of apples come from orchards that have absolutely nothing sprayed. No fertilizer.
And that's typical in Highland County. That's how people have managed their trees forever. And we have the advantage of climate on our side.
That keeps the bugs down. We have these late frosts that really knock out the apple crop to some extent. And so that really puts a hurting on the insect population, because when they hatch out in the spring and there's no apples to get onto, it really sets them back a long way. So when you have years with no apples, it's hard for us as cider makers. But at the same time, it helps the next year's crop, because the insects will not be, and the diseases are not near as bad.
It helps us manage those things that otherwise we'd be managing chemically or physically.
So what's the lesson here, that we should all be making cider at the elevation of 2,700 feet? Okay, folks, forget the sea level. Start moving up the mountains,
exactly.
Right?
Hey, global warming is coming. You can move up and into the mountains where it's a little bit cooler and you have less pressure from heat, from disease, and from the insects.
Well, I'm sure Ciderville listening right now, the folks who are orchardists or, you know, cider makers with orchards are really feeling like, oh, you lucky ducks.
We're lucky when we have apples. Those years, the darning apples, that would be a little tough.
Yeah.
If you're an orchardist. And that's why there aren't any commercial orchards in Highland County. And there were some planted, but they've really gone to neglect. Which is great for us, because
to
our benefit, because we were able to get those apples that nothing sprayed on them. Our main cider orchard is planted with golden russets and northern spies. It's got some jonagolds, ash mead kernels, and haven't been cared for years.
Dolgo crabs. Crab apples.
Wow.
And
yeah,
so
nice.
We get some wonderful apples out of that orchard. There's about 300 trees in there. And the output, because there's no input to it, the output is probably not that much. We've got about 530 bushels, I think, of apples out of that orchard last year, but they're the top quality for cider making.
Because we're managing those orchards, we're going in and selectively picking for ripe apples, not...
Mm-hmm. Right. We actually go in and we'll gather the ground drops and wait, come back, gather more ground drops and can lightly shake. And we can go back to the same tree a couple different times to make sure that the apples are ripe. And that makes, of course, a big difference in good cider.
What kind of press are you using?
We've got a little Good Nature, what they call an accordion press. It's like a rag and cloth. It's an accordion press that's made up actually around Buffalo, New York.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little press. We knock out about a typical, you know, pressing day for us. We only do about 250 gallons, and it takes about 5 or 6 hours to knock out 250 gallons. But that's what we operate on, 250 gallons tanks at a time is basically what we're working with.
Are you using a variable, like stainless steel type of wine tank?
No, we've got small tanks. We've got a 2,000 liter and a 1,000 liter jacketed tank. We don't use variable capacity tanks.
Okay.
And then we do some of it in IBCs. We've got the oxygen barrier IBCs that we do some of our fermentation in too.
So I want to go back to the fact that you have 250 people in the town. You're making cider.
And there's not a lot of consumers coming out of the town. One thing good about Highland County, we're about 3 hours from D.C. Market and about the same from Richmond. So we have a lot of weekenders that come back also.
I mean, 3 hours is 3 hours, though.
Yeah,
so
it's
folks,
3 hours.
That's a pretty dedicated.
Yeah,
but there's a lot of second homeowners in our community.
Okay.
And so especially in the summer, getting out of the swamp of D.C. and the swamp of Richmond.
Yeah.
People come up to the mountains a lot. And so
it's cooler there in the summertime.
I bet.
And so we get some of that traffic, which really helps us a lot.
Yeah.
And we've got a maple festival that goes on every March that just brings, you know, in a county with 2,400 people, it brings 40 to 50,000 people over 2 weekends. And that really kicks off our year, because Highland, if you can imagine, I mean, it's at that elevation. We get a fair amount of snow. It's very, very cold. January, February. And we keep our tasting room open on weekends, but there's not a lot happening until Maple Festival. And then the rest of the year is pretty good through about October. Though we're down in Virginia, we're down southern area of the country because of our elevation. I mean, there's a lot of the things that we grow there just or grow wild there that aren't seen pretty much south of Canada.
Wow, so interesting. So let's talk about your tasting room, because it's in...
I bought an old building years ago. It was an old restaurant and theater, as a matter of fact.
High ceilings?
In parts of it, yeah. In the theater part of it, it does. But our tasting room it's a small, little, cozy tasting room. And it's only about 20 feet by 20 feet. It's probably, it's very,
intimate,
very small.
Very intimate.
Square feet,
nice.
Yeah.
Nice, perfect.
But we've reclaimed the wood out of the place. It was built in 1920, so it's full of, the whole building was pretty much wormy chestnut. So
wow.
We've been able to come out. I've got a friend that's a really good woodworker.
Wormy chestnut.
Yeah, it was chestnut lumber that back in the late 1800s really got infected by the chestnut blight, killed them.
Yeah.
But the trees are very resistant to water,
right.
And they just stood there. And, of course, bugs got to it. And then in the early 1900s, 1910 to 1920, they were cutting those down the wood is good, but they've got wormhole. And it's called wormy chestnuts. Of course, they don't, you know, chestnut really don't get to full size in our area of the country anymore. And,
no, they don't.
The wormy chestnut is a pretty wood.
I bet it is. Really strong wood, too. It reminds me of a book that Barbara Kingsolver wrote. And there's the whole baseline is about chestnuts.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, interesting. That's so fascinating. So you have a tasting room. So is a higher ceiling area, is that where the cidery is?
Right. That's back in right behind the tasting room is our lab where we do the testing and all that. And then right beyond that is our tank room, we call it. And it's got very high ceilings. We've got walls that are about probably close to 20 inches thick, so we can really control the temperature in there.
Mm-hmm.
And
I bet you can.
And so we can keep it 55 degrees in there, I mean, from October all the way through to about at least April. We can keep it into 55. And even in summertime, it rarely gets above 70.
We don't have air conditioning. We don't use air conditioning.
Doesn't sound like you need it.
No. No. Really don't. Yeah. I mean, there's sometimes, like in September, if we're pressing apples in September, it can get warm. So it's one of those things that, okay, you open up. I'll go in and open the windows at night, and then when Sarah comes in the morning, she'll close them. So we use the cool air that comes in.
Natural air conditioning.
Yeah, but
why not?
But
right?
I mean, that helps with what's in the IBCs. But we can control the temperature on the on our stainless steel tanks that have that are jacketed.
So let's talk about your cider making then.
Okay.
Are you doing that approach, which is like low and slow fermentation?
Right. And that's how I did it as a home cider maker. And of course, I follow, you know, Claude Jolicoeur. I mean, I think the world of what he's. And you know, of course, I took Peter Mitchell's classes too, which is completely different than Claude Jolicoeur. So I'm somewhere in the middle there. I want some control over the cider, but at the same time, I want to keep it slow. So we really lower the temperature. We operate at the very lowest range and oftentimes below the recommended range for the yeast to keep it slow.
Really slow, okay.
Yeah, we try to ferment our ciders, you know, and it's a whole lot different when we're fermenting the cider from the apples that we get around Highland that are no input orchards. I mean, as I said earlier, beyond organic, there's no input. And so the low nutrients make a nice low fermentation, nice. But the commercial orchards will. It's a little bit tougher to keep those slow because they just want to take off. So you really have to keep chilling the cider down to try to keep that down.
One of our fermentations this year that was some wild apples that we found out in a pasture in Highland County. The fermentation was like 2.5 months.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
2 years ago, we had Northern Spies that lasted 3 months.
You'd walk by and the airlock would occasionally bubble and you'd go, oh, you're still fermenting over there.
Well, that's why they call it wild, because they're own rulers, those yeasties.
Right. We were lucky. And that's the interesting thing about a Highland. It's mountainous, but there's apple trees everywhere.
Everywhere. What is the history there of all the apple trees everywhere?
It was a farming community. In every small farm, and because it's so mountainous, you don't have big farms. They're all small farms.
Uh-huh.
You know, if you see a 300-400 acre farm, it's probably a big farm. So a lot of it was probably close to subsistence. But every farmer would have a few apple trees. I mean, that was really important to rural communities, particularly in the mountains. So, of course, the trees dropped their apples, and the wildlife picked up the apples. And you find apple trees. You're walking in the mountain, and all of a sudden, there's another apple tree that just has sprung up. And the field that Sarah was talking about a moment ago, I mean, cattle farmer came in there and decided to clear the land. It was grown up, but he had enough foresight to say, oh, golly, there's all these apple trees. And there's probably over 100 apple trees on this path. So we got in there.
Like plantings, not in rows or anything.
They're wild feral trees.
Okay,
they just grew from seed.
Good.
And so we went through and we basically did a test on the sugar content. The sugar content was good. We picked the apples, and so I'm looking forward to that. That's the first. We got about 135 gallons of wild apples or cider from wild apples. So I'm looking forward to what we can do with that. The fermentation just finished, so we're getting ready to move to the next step, and we'll probably do a bottle ferment with that. So looking forward to
that. Very nice. Wow. Well, you walked in the room, you opened a bottle of cider immediately, and we start drinking it. This is a Highland Scrumpy sitting in front. Beautiful, beautiful label, a green background with the Big Fish Cider Company and a fish down below. And what kind of fish is that?
That's a trout.
The trout,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, we've got a lot of trout in there. Actually, the name came from the building we bought. It used to be a restaurant. They were well known for their trout. And the people that owned the building also actually had a sign company here in Baltimore. So they put this 20-foot trout, neon trout, on top of the building. And so when we bought the building, and it's sort of interesting to go back to, I used to make cider in the basement of my house, and then I got... My wife had bought me a cider press, and I kept making more and more. And she came home one day, and it was probably warm September, and the cider fermenting was not smelling as it should. It was a little sulfury smelling. And she walked in the house, and she said, "Kirk, never again will you make cider in my house." And so I had to find another spot. But we'd bought this commercial building because my wife had needed office space, and from a friend, and there was all this room down there that I'll just take it down there. So I built this super insulated room down in the building. And when I would go down there, I would always tell my wife, "I'm gonna run down to the Big Fish and check on the cider." And that's how the name came. And,
I see. Okay.
If I took the Big Fish off the top of that building, they would tar and feather me and run me out of town.
So it's somewhat of a we don't want that to happen.
Landmark. No.
Now, when you're making such fantastic cider, this is absolutely delicious.
Oh, thank you.
Just to let Ciderville know what's going on here. So we have this like nice little petulant, you know. Tiny little air bubbles going up, and it's like a rich yellow straw color, but the taste it's like a dry kind of nice back taste, nice finish, residual sweetness going on there,
just a little bit. Yep.
Yeah, a little bit of residual, but I've drank a lot of cider today.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. A lot, or I should say I've drunk a lot of cider. Look, I've been drinking cider, what can I say? But I'm so happy with this because it's really clearing my palate. It's a strong enough cider that it's standing on its own up to all the ciders I've been drinking. It comes through and it doesn't just get lost in my mouth that's been, mm-hmm. you know, drinking a lot today.
Yeah, this
really
is this
delicious.
Is an interesting one because it's we call it our Highland Scrumpy, and it's one of the things I'm trying to get the local folks interested in cider and being a part of Big Fish Cider is we have a community apple drive every year. So we just say, "Hey, bring us your apples. We'll give them coupons, or we'll actually pay them cash for whatever apples." So there's wonderful old apple trees all over the farms, and people will bring apples, we've got a lot of older folks there. They'll just call us up and say, "Kirk, Sarah, come pick the. You can have all you want. I'd rather not go to waste." So we go to their farms, we go to their backyards, and we pick apples. And that one, we put them all together, and there's more than 20 varieties in that. And we press it, and we just do a wild ferment with that and just let it go.
Mm.
And then when we tasted it this year, with many wild ferments, and I often say that the best cider I've ever had comes from a wild ferment, but the worst cider I've ever had comes from a wild ferment. You never know, so I'm always scared to do a whole lot of wild ferment, but we did a wild ferment on this, and it had just a little bit of musty flavor to it. So I decided, well, I'll blend it in with some Northern Spy cider that I had, and I think it's lovely. It's got some nice tannins because of the way we grow the apples. There's no sprays once again,
mm-hmm.
So they have to fend for themselves as far as disease and bugs. You get a nice tannins in there, and nice acidities. You'll notice that our apples have a lot of acidity. That's a little different from apples that are grown at our elevation compared to Shenandoah Valley, which is a great apple-growing region. But we get a little bit more acidity, and because of the no sprays, et cetera, we get some nice tannins.
Mm-hmm.
in our
rock-solid cider. And the beauty of it is how you were able to make it with this community.
Mm-hmm.
Has the cider interest in Monterey and the communities around there kind of grown a little bit more towards going towards cider since
you've opened? I think so. We've had another cidery pop up just up the road from us. Well, in Franklin, West Virginia.
Is that Swill Dog?
And I know they came and visited us before they were open.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a huge, as you can imagine, with a county of 2,400 people, there's not a huge local market for cider. But, yeah,
What else is everybody drinking?
They're
drinking.
What else are they going to do?
Because part of it is, in Monterey, there's
three restaurants, essential, more or less.
In Monterey, with 2,400 people.
There's, like,
people.
Two little, like, country southern diners, and then a higher-end restaurant that's associated with a local inn. And so if someone wants to go have a drink on a Friday night, the cidery is the place to go. And so that's... that.
There's no other bar or anything.
There is nothing open on Friday afternoon.
Wow. So you have a very contained audience.
There is a drive to, if you want to have that social activity without feeling the need to sit down and order a three-course meal, that we're the place to come.
And do you have a flight at the tasting room?
No, too? We don't. We rarely that crowded. We've talked about it in the past. I want to introduce the ciders to the customers. Yeah. I want them to know, okay, this is what the apples are in this cider,
right.
and walk them through it. And if they just get a flight, they can go down. I guess you could give them a piece of paper, but that gives us a chance. I'm a little peculiar that way. I like it, the cider, to be presented in a certain way to them.
And so we offer a tasting, but it's at the bar with kind of a guided tasting. So our staff person is going through each cider and kind of explaining the story of that cider.
Like a winery would do
a
tasting.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay,
exactly.
All right.
Yeah.
So that's wonderful too.
So we're not really a bar. You can come in and sit down and have a glass or two of cider, but it's not, realize we're very, very small. There's three tables in there and 12 chairs.
Yeah. Three tables in there and 12 chairs.
We're starting to expand the tasting room. We're going to almost double its size.
Wow.
We might have six tables.
Six tables.
And,
right.
And 24 chairs,
okay.
Maybe.
A little tiny, tiny, tiny stage.
Ooh, for a little music.
For a little, yeah.
Wow. Well, Monterey is getting on the map in Virginia. If folks are coming down to Big Fish, because that's really the best way to taste some cider.
Oh, yes.
You get to taste them all.
Pretty much.
So they could stay at that hotel?
Yeah.
That has a restaurant?
Yeah.
What's the name of the hotel?
Highland Inn.
Highland Inn?
Yeah.
Okay. Camping is local, to imagine?
There's really not a...
Limited options for camping.
We've got a beautiful national forest and all, so it's a lot of primitive camping. The closest campground, I guess, would be down at the... Virginia Power has put in a hydroelectric dam just south of us in Bath County, and they've got a very nice recreation area and camping site.
And a modern camping.
Yeah.
Okay.
But primitive camping is available in the George Washington National Forest and the Monongahela just over into West Virginia.
I know that. Well, yeah.
And then there's a ton of wonderful little bed and breakfasts and a couple little rural inns, and then the Highland Inn, which is our little small hotel.
Good.
Right in Monterey.
Well, that's okay. I just have a hammock. I'm just going to one lamppost to the other.
Do it in summertime, though.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Well, I am a New Englander, so, you know.
It still gets cold.
All right. Okay. I'll just bivvy out there. You learned your technique from Peter Mitchell, from reading all these, like, pioneer authors.
I started making cider about 25 years ago, Maria, just to myself. I mean, I grew up, and my dad would make cider, just fresh squeezed cider, and we would have it every fall. And I just loved the flavor of the cider. I remember jumping off the school bus and throwing my books down and running out to the barrel, and we left the barrel outside and grabbing a glass. And Dad would always tell me that, hey, that cider is better if you wait 2 weeks. But I just loved the cider.
Yeah.
And Dad didn't really make hard cider. Actually, when it got to a point, I mean, it would start turning to vinegar, and about the time my mother would say Thane, which was my father's name, you better get rid of the cider now.
Okay.
And so, but anyway, I grew up loving that, and I came home from college one time, and I'd called ahead to see if Dad had made any cider that year, and whether we didn't have a good apple crop or whether he didn't have the free labor to pick apples, he didn't make cider. So I'll pick him up a couple jugs, you know, one for him to hold back a couple weeks and one to drink that weekend. And it was the most tasteless, listless cider I'd ever had in my life. And I thought, well, what's different about the cider I got over in the Shenandoah Valley compared to ours? And realized it was the old heritage apple trees. And I thought, oh my God, these apple trees are, you know, they're 40 feet tall. They're probably close to 80 to 100 years old. I've got to save these trees. There was a Elwood Fisher, Dr. Elwood Fisher. He was a biology professor that grew up in West Virginia, as a matter of fact, but he taught at JMU, where I went to school. And he had a cider making class, or excuse me, not a cider making class, but a grafting class. I learned how to graft so I could save those trees.
Wow.
And then realized, because I didn't even know. I knew there was a smokehouse, and there was a, later I found out, oh, one tree is a bald one, and one tree is a Grimes Golden. And so I realized, oh, we've got to save these. Now, of course, you can find those trees lots of different places,
but
what it did was open my eyes to the value of those trees that they were really growing all over the county.
So you got some old trees there.
Oh yeah,
oh, 100-year-old trees.
Oh yeah,
easily
100-year-old.
Easily,
trees.
Yeah. But those are pretty tall trees. So are you primarily just dealing with
our
drops?
Our orchards actually. I mean, we get some from tall trees, but I don't bounce like I used to, so I don't like climbing that high anymore.
A lot of work.
But really, the orchards we're working with. There was one orchard that was planted in the late 80s. That was the orchard I was talking earlier. Mm-hmm. That's got the golden russets. It's got ashmead kernels. It's got northern spies and the dolgos, etc. And that was a semi dwarf. Those trees probably get up to about 20 feet. They haven't been pruned well over the years. We're just sort of
some
getting
of the
into
northern
the last couple
spies
years.
Are taller. Are going on 30.
Yeah. But they're so we get some we get a lot of our apples from those, and then the other two orchards are both semi-dwarf orchards too, and we prune those a little bit better. We got a hold of them when they were younger, so we're able to keep those size controlled a little bit better. But we also still we go out to the farms and backyards to get apples from the trees. We just take the ladders and go up and get them.
That's right.
I'm a bit of a monkey.
Good. That's a good trait to have.
She still bounces.
Wonderful. Wonderful. We need more monkeys. When did you go commercial? What year?
2015, I guess.
2015. Mm-hmm. So this is pretty recent, really,
yes,
for you.
Yes, very recent. Very recent.
Learning curve. Looking back, what did you, if you look back now, just in that 3-year span of time, anything you do differently?
You know, that is a darn good question. No, I don't think so. I mean, maybe some equipment purchases might have been a little bit different. But no, I mean, you know, we actually, the first year out, we got a Glent Cap Best in Show Award. I mean, the first year. I mean, we're blessed with good apples. I mean, that's it. And
that's
the secret to cider making.
About,
I mean, there's no secret to cider making. If you can get the right variety apples that are grown with no input or very, very little input.
And are allowed
you can
to
make
ripen all
on the
way
tree.
On the trees.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We really haven't. Oh, I've learned some things. Like the first year, we also make a maple barrel aged, which we'll pop one up
goody.
In a little bit so you can
goody,
taste
goody.
That. But we used too much maple syrup, and it was too strong on the maple syrup. So we learned, you learn things like that. And barrel aging, you got to be careful.
Well, let's talk about barrel aging.
I'm not a big fan of barrel aging.
Okay, tell me. Well,
we
it's not
it because
easy.
Because people like it. To me, apple's such a delicate flavor that it can get lost so easily in the taste of oak. And really, our apples, we have so much tannin in them. You really don't need the tannin from the oak.
Well, what kind of barrels are you using?
I'm using brandy barrels, apple
brandy. So that will overwhelm the apple for sure.
That will. And so this year when we did it, we basically washed out the barrels a lot better than we have in the years past. Try to get any residual as much as we can. I mean, obviously it's in wood. And then we also only put a portion of the cider in the barrels to age instead of putting 100% of them in barrel aging. We only did about 60% of the cider in barrels, and that brought down the flavor of the oak a little bit. But we had better apples this year with a little higher acidity. So and I'm
beautiful.
More pleased with this. That once again, I'm not a big fan of barrel aging, but you got to make what sells, and people love barrel aged whatever. So and actually, I do like this cider.
All right. Well, he has in his hand now. Sarah pulled out this bottle.
And it's called Monterey Maple. Okay. Monterey, of course, is a town we and maple syrup is big in our particular area of Virginia. And once again, we have a maple festival that's very popular every second and third weekend of March. Pretty much all of our ciders, you're going to find sort of a consistent theme that we're using local ingredients. We use local maple syrup. We make a sizer. We didn't bring that local honey. We have a fire cider. You ever heard of fire cider?
Yes, I have.
And we call it fireside because you can't call it fire cider in the U.S.
Look at that pretty bottle there.
But we take it to a local sugar camp, and we basically boil it down to about 1/3 of its original volume, and then ferment that.
Wow.
We do a raspberry cider that's very, very popular. And it's made with there's a farm just across the mountain from us that grows a lot of produce, and they grow some wonderful raspberries, and we get their raspberries. So, yeah, the consistent theme is we're using local products.
Yep. Now, just on your packaging, 750 ml bottles, people want to get Big Fish Cider Company. They have to go to the tasting room.
We're distributed in the state of Virginia, and right now our distribution area is the city of Richmond, Charlottesville, Crozet, Harrisonburg, Stanton, Roanoke, Blacksburg, and anywhere in Virginia we can ship.
So you're producing enough cider to be able to do that.
Oh, yeah. There's not a lot of demand in Monterey.
Monterey is looking better and better to me. I tell you, Monterey is a place to go.
It's kind of like a small town in New England, except that you're down in Virginia.
Yeah, yeah. Isn't that interesting? Mm. Wow.
Come visit us.
Come on down.
Well, I couldn't think of anything better to do with my time than to go to Monterey and hang out with you folks. You're just absolutely delightful.
Right now, you're only about 4 hours away.
Only 4 hours. Well,
For us, grocery store, everything is an hour away. So, town is an hour away. And so our perspective on distance is maybe a little skewed.
Yep. That's kind of like a Western's view on distance. Yeah. You go 90 miles, it's not a big deal.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Except East Coast 90 miles are...
straight out.
Is like...
Windy. Wow.
Up and down.
Well, you have to have a certain kind of like chutzpah to be able to live in that kind of country, right?
Well, I don't know if you were born there, you don't know any different like I was.
That's true.
So I don't know if I've got it or not, but anyway,
I was born in Nelson County, which is south of Charlottesville. But I grew up on a non-working farm, the way I describe it is until you make that decision to leave, I grew up just as far away from everything as we are in Highland County. And my husband grew up in Highland County, and he was born at home on the very western edge of the county and in a blizzard in March. And it's just what it is.
Yeah,
it's normal. And
right.
So.
I love that. I love it. All right. So you've just poured it's called the
Monterey Maple. So, yeah, this one is a mixture of actually Gold Rush apples, Northern Spy apples. Do you remember
Jonna
what other?
Gold and Mutsu.
And Jonna Gold and Mutsu.
Okay,
yeah, that's right.
Mutsu.
And so we fermented that.
So you know what these trees are are these feral trees?
All of the ciders we make aren't from feral trees.
Okay.
Just some of them. Okay. I mean, we know that the commercial orchards that are in Highland or the three orchards, we know what apples they are.
The three orchards that we manage in Highland.
Mm-hmm. We get wild apples, so we do other things. Same year, yeah.
Cheers.
And we do get some apples from commercial orchards outside of Highland. We're not quite on the scale yet of being able to produce all the apples that we need. And so the Mutsu and the Jonna Gold, though we are growing Jonna Gold, this particular batch came from a commercial orchard out in Nelson County.
Okay.
And Mutsu is an apple I like, particularly coming from the valley. It's a little bit lower acid, and once again, most of our apples that we grow are fairly high acid. So every now and then we buy some from the valley to help tone down our acid just a little bit.
So this is, what's the ABV on this?
This particular one is
8.4.
It's a little higher alcohol content because what we're
right on the
syrup.
Verge there, right of the cider act, which is 8.5 before you start getting taxed at a different rate.
Yeah, well, and I don't look at that. I mean, we really don't look at that when I'm making the cider. But if we basically, it's about 250 gallons of cider that we added about 10 gallons of maple syrup to, and that's what it brought the
really
ABV
subtle.
Up to.
Yeah. And was this in the barrel?
This was in the
bourbon.
Mm-hmm. In Brandy barrel.
Mm-hmm. Which we get our barrels locally, too.
Well, over near Charlottesville, North Garden, Virginia.
Yeah, there's a brandy producer in Albemarle County.
Wow.
Near Albemarle Cider Works. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And so we get our barrels from them.
Nice.
So, we try and source everything.
As much as we can, right?
So you have this kind of like cleansing, the dry cider kind of
right. It's
drop,
our ciders
even though it's
are,
maple though,
Right.
So you have that kind of the sweet and the dry there, really working together.
If you're thinking pancake syrup, you're not going to get it.
No,
out of that.
Not at all.
Really, what you're getting when you take the sweetness away from maple syrup, there's a woodiness that comes mm-hmm. from it, and it's completely different than what you put on your pancakes.
This, yeah, the earthiness is. I like to describe it as the essence of maple syrup. It's basically what you take, what you get if you take away the sugar part of maple syrup.
Mm-hmm. Now your yeast that mm-hmm. you're working with here. Do you have kind of like a house yeast that you do, or do you
my 25 years of cider making, a lot of what I did was yeast trials. There's some yeast I like, there's some yeast I don't. I've pretty much come to, first of all, I like to do slow cold ferment. So I'm looking for yeast that will tolerate 50 degrees and 55 degrees.
Yeah.
So there's a, I've, and they're typically white wine yeast, and there's a yeast I think from Australia that I use, there's a yeast from Austria that I use, and there's a German yeast, and there's a French yeast that I use.
Good. I like the multicultural element of that.
And there's certain things, there's certain yeast I'll use with different apples. There's some that'll soften the acid, like 71B is a yeast
classic.
That'll bring down the I don't use 71B, but there's other yeast that have that same quality that will just mm-hmm. sort of take the edge off that acid a little mm-hmm. bit. And then there's some apples that you don't want to tone down that acid mm-hmm. at all. So you can use more of almost a champagne style yeast. Mm-hmm. I don't use champagne yeast. But
we're still doing yeast trials. I mean, still do we ferment single varietal as a general rule. Our blended ciders, like the Monterey maple that we're adding the maple syrup at the beginning, and our sizer and our Churchill blush, which is the one that has the raspberries in it, we blend those at pressing. But a lot of our other ciders, including the Scrumpy, we are pretty much fermenting single varietal, or with the Scrumpy, the wild apples kind of go into one batch, and then single varieties go into other batches.
And then you blend.
And then we blend post-fermentation.
That's how we do their Allegheny Gold and our uh-huh. Crab Bottom Pip and some of our higher end ciders. We will do that way. And so we don't have a set, 25% of this apple, 15% of this apple.
Yeah.
We basically, there's people that have younger taste buds than mine that haven't eaten all the spicy food that I have, that really can pick up on the nuances of the flavors. And I'll bring them in and we'll do blind taste test. And, and I'll put out, four or five different ciders and different blends of what I know the structure that I'm looking for in the cider. I know what the taste profile is, and then I'll let them judge the ciders and pick what they like, and then that's how I come up with my blend. I'm not a big fan of never have been of single varietals. I love to drink them, but there's not much complexity to a single mm-hmm. variety cider. I like several different apples in it to really balance each other out to me, mm-hmm. and that's what we do when we do our blending.
So what I'm getting is that there's that low temperature is really key to big fish.
Yes.
Sounds like a little bit lower than some makers for sure.
Oh yeah, I'll take it down. I've taken it down in the 40s. I mean, if the fermentation is going too fast, if I'm mm-hmm. knocking out four or five specific mm-hmm. gravities a day, mm-hmm. it's like that's too fast. I will take it under the temperature. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I will get a little touch of sulfur, and then better bring the temperature
back up. Too slow.
But really, the sulfur smells typically come from the nutrient mm-hmm. deficiency and not the temperature as much.
Do you add anything into your cider? You're doing yeast nutrients or?
Whenever I need to.
How do you stop fermentation too?
How do I stop fermentation?
Yeah.
Pretty much we let everything go to dryness. And then we'll
even this maple.
The maple, that goes completely mm-hmm. to dryness, okay. and then we age it. And that one's got about a quarter percent residual sugar. We actually back sweeten it with corn just to take the edge off, because once again, our ciders are so acidic. We just do just a little bit. That's what we consider.
No filtration or just racking?
No, we will filter that after it comes out of the barrel.
But you're just filtering
it. You'll get some charcoal coming through.
Chunks of charcoal.
Oh yeah, right.
So yeah,
barrel,
we do.
Yeah,
we'll run it through
the filter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you do some filtration, but you're not doing that to get the yeast out. It's just
we're not doing sterile.
Just to make it bright, because it's really nice clarity, and back sweetening. You know what I like hearing here, and I think it's good for anyone making cider, whether commercial or not commercial, is the fact that you're not afraid to go dry.
Right.
And then you add that little bit of sweetness, and it pops it back up. I think, why the heck not? you know?
Yeah, and I think a lot of it is the balance with the acid. I mean, if it's very acid, like of the ciders and like the apples that we have in Highland County, you really need to... You need to balance that out just a little bit.
Right.
You need to take the edge off that acid. And so going 0.25% on this one or maybe closer to a percent on the scrumpy, what it does is really take the edge off that
mm-hmm.
acid. And you're, once again, you're trying to meet your consumer. You're trying to meet what they like. I mean, I'm always trying to pull them to the drier side, but if it's pure dry, it doesn't sell.
Our best seller is our Churchill Blush, which is made with raspberries. So it's got some additional fruitiness in addition to the apples. And it's a medium sweet cider. But my mother's favorite cider for the first 2 years was Churchill Blush. And recently I brought home a bottle of Crab Bottom Pippin, which is also has about 0.25% residual sugar and it's got crab apples in it. So it's got high acid. And she said, oh, let me taste that again. And she goes, oh, I really like that.
So we're training our customers.
Well, because, the palate develops over time.
It does. Yeah.
Yeah, how exciting. Well, thank you for doing that.
Yeah.
And thanks for your mom, for being so open. Well, again, I just really want Ciderville listening to this conversation that there's so many folks who want to say, how do I stop fermentation? How do I stop fermentation? And if you're starting out or even if you've been in the game for a while, don't worry about it. Let it go dry. You can back sweeten a little bit. But also letting it go dry, you get that minerality of the apples.
Right.
Just want to say, fear not the dryness.
Right.
Because it'll also help you, too, with the finish and the mouthfeel. And I think you really are spot on with these ciders.
I think I'm
impressed.
A real sense of, like, the true flavor when you let it go all the way dry. I mean, that's the way that we prefer to do our tasting is taste it all the way dry. And we really know the true flavors that we're getting that way.
Yeah. And once again, once a little bit of taken off the edge of that acid, and then all of a sudden other flavors will pop. So, you know.
That's right.
Doesn't take much that's what I'm looking
right.
for. That's the flavor I'm looking for.
So the maple here, the Monterey maple, when do you add the maple?
The same day we press.
The same day? So
it's not back sweetened with maple syrup at all. No,
at all. So the maple has been fermented.
Yeah, the maple
syrup.
What
grade are you using?
That one was actually grade B maple syrup in
which
that
is,
one.
You know, stronger. I mean, I
right,
prefer
it's
to
got a, it's a little bit
have
darker.
A grade
on the,
B.
On the pancakes, I like grade A. I love the lighter color, the better.
I'm a B person. That's okay.
But for cider, and actually the first year I made this, I used 15 gallons of grade B, and it was a little bit overwhelming with the maple flavor, so we backed it off. But it's and I haven't been able to get that much grade A, but I'd like
a little
to try
harder.
Grade A.
Yeah. So, cider making tips for folks who are out there in Ciderville?
I think you know, quite honestly, it's as we've mentioned before, it's really the apples and how they're grown is going to help
that's cool. You're a lucky duck that you have good apples.
Most people don't.
All right, so a lot of people don't.
The second thing you can do is your fermentation. Control your fermentation. Don't just throw champagne yeast in there. Champagne yeast will take that thing to complete way beyond complete dryness, and it gives it sort of a one-dimensional. Experiment with some yeast. That's one of my main things that I did for years before I went commercial was play around with different yeast, and you'll find some yeast that will actually bring some floral qualities out. You'll find yeast that will bring other things out, and then all of a sudden, hey, I want to mix those two together, and you can get some wonderful blends. I think really yeast is, and look at white wine yeast. I mean, I haven't experimented that much with red wine yeast, but white wine yeast, especially from Germany, look at regions that like sweet ciders, like Germany.
Right. Or sweet wines, right.
Yeah. Well, they make sweet cider in Germany,
too.
But sweet wines, exactly. They like fruitiness. They want different things coming through on their wines, and those yeast typically will bring those fruity notes out of the apple the same way they do the wines. I'm making cider to my palate. I told my wife, I mean, if this thing goes under, at least I'll have a lot of cider that I like to drink.
Well, I have a feeling, tasting this cider, you are not going to go under. You brought out a different bottle here.
We'll let you try the fire cider. And this is one, I don't know if there's another fire cider being made commercially in the U.S.
I don't know.
But I know it's one that they used to make in Canada. I read that in Claude Jolicoeur's book, and I thought, my God, we've got maple producer, yeah. syrup producers all around the county. Mm-hmm. And so I've got a buddy, Doug Puffenbarger, Puffenbarger's maple sugar camp, and I took it to him, and we took 550 gallons up, and we put it in the evaporating pan, and we evaporated it down to one-third of its original volume, and what you'll notice this is just a little bit cloudy because the heat that we put on it, you will have caramel notes that come through.
You know, you're pouring it out, and it's, let me get a little clip on that just so people could see how.
It didn't get the bulb, the blip, 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 blip that time.
No.
Which I think is what you were looking for.
No, actually, I was looking at the viscosity of it.
Viscosity.
Was amazing.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, and it's about 15. This is about 15% residual sugar.
Yeah.
In this, so when you and you'll pick up on that, but
yeah,
on your nose,
legs
pick
on
up
that.
On your nose.
Wow.
You get the caramel notes right away.
Yeah, you do.
And there's nothing happening. So many people come to me and say,
"Wow,
what do you add to this cider?" And it's like there's absolutely nothing to add to the cider. It's just apples that have been.
Well, there's about 30 hours of love.
30 hours.
Like, I'm sitting beside an evaporating pan
evaporating
and waiting.
Pan. Watching it boil. It's literally watching cider boil for 30 hours.
So you have the fresh pressed apple juice that you boiled down.
Yes.
To a certain.
Right.
Well, how do you know when to stop?
You're basically using
a syrup hydrometer.
We're using a hydrometer to see where the sugar level is. Now, the thing that you don't realize is how much you have to adjust that temperature. So we actually took this a little bit sweeter, a little bit more residual sugar than I wanted to. So it's a little bit, but it's actually the balance is nice.
Well, and you pull it, all of a sudden you go, oh my gosh, we're there, and you pull it off. And that thing is still
hot. It continues to evaporate.
It was about 10 degrees outside, and our tank was outside. And so we would continue, you know, we'd take that, pull the hot cider off, and it would continue to evaporate. And so it got thicker than we meant for it.
Oh, no.
But it turned out very, very nice.
Yeah, it certainly did. So you boil it down.
Right.
And yeast selection here now
that's 171B. That's 171B.
No kidding.
Because not only are you concentrating
the
sugar.
It can tolerate that.
Yeah.
Okay.
When not only are you concentrating the sugar, you're concentrating the acid in there too. And so that's the situation. You want to bring some of that acidity down. And so we used actually a 71B on that particular cider. And we fermented it. God, how long do we ferment?
It fermented like 4 months.
At least four months.
And of course, to stop to arrest the fermentation, you're just continually racking the cider, right?
Rack it, filter it.
So we just kept doing that over and over. And of course, every time you do it, it slows the fermentation down. And finally, it just, you know, it was in July. It finally just stopped. Thankfully.
So it actually will stop because, I mean, that's a thing with like ice ciders is folks are making it and it'll start re-fermenting again.
Right. Well, and we actually had that situation on this. We did it, and we were in July, and finally it stopped. So I took bottles and the area of the building that we haven't fixed up yet, I set one bottle over there, put a cap on it, and I mean it gets 80 degrees in there and sun comes in there, so I thought, well, we'll see, we'll give it a month. So I left it over there for a month and I brought it back over and we popped the top. Nothing. I mean, there was no pressure to it and all. I thought, okay, now we have it. So we bottled everything up.
Uh-oh.
And that was in September.
Mm-hmm.
And then I remember it was a month later, October, and I went in to check out the tasting room, and
we
were
Saturday.
Serving
we
on a Saturday, and they were busy, so I went in there, and we needed to open another bottle, so I got the cork out, and
boom,
had a, no, just a little bit of,
just a little.
Wait a minute, that shouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
And so Monday I was off, must have been a holiday weekend, Monday I was off, I came in there, and we grabbed 3 or 4 bottles, and just shook as much as we could. And took the corks out. Sure enough, they foamed up just a little bit. So I thought, oh no, it hasn't stopped. So then it's like, now what?
What do you do?
I'll tell you what you do.
Yeah, I want to know because this is a big question for a lot of makers.
Realize that this is fireside, so it's already undergone heat, right?
Yes.
It killed everything way back when, so heat's not going to bother it. So we basically got, of course, they're all corked. So we took champagne
crowns.
They're
not corked with champagne corks.
No,
they're corked with regular wine corks.
So we thought and you can't put bottle caps on these bottles.
No, you can't.
So basically, we just took champagne hoods,
we
put on
a
there.
Factory in
and because the size is not right, we tried to change a little bit the size so it wouldn't come out much, and then we pasteurized all the remaining bottles of Fireside that we had.
You pasteurized it. So just to catch Ciderville up, the bottles that we're talking about, this is not a 750 mil bottle.
This is a 375. They call it a Bellissimo, but it's a very thin, elegant bottle, and just corked.
Like
there's no crown cap.
A dessert wine cider bottle that you would get like a ice cider in, you know. I always find it a very sexy bottle. I don't know why.
Yeah, that's exactly what I refer to.
You know that it's like, okay, this is like the hour of just like kicking back and enjoying it.
I mean, Kirk said when we were trying to figure out exactly where the label went on this bottle, it was like, you don't want to show too much leg and you don't want her dress to be cut too low.
Just perfect. Beautiful label, too. I mean, the way that the color of your label blends with the actual color of the cider.
Right.
It's like a match made in heaven. It really is. I mean, I was that on purpose?
Yeah, I mean,
Oh my goodness!
You look at all of our other labels; they were like that. I wanted something.
The fish is the same color. The fishes are that standard color that we've used.
Right.
And some,
and which has always been the color of cider. Yep.
Yeah. Really lovely. Yeah, and you have a nice dry to sweet scale.
But what's interesting about the re-fermentation of the bottle, that was the best cider. It has a little bit of sparkle to it, which you don't get out of this because it's been pasteurized. But I've still got some of the original bottles in my basement beside my
keeping
furnace.
Keeping it cold.
No.
Oh,
I want to see if they'll blow. Never have.
I
guess
yeah.
They were just so close to being done. Mm. And when you do pop one, we actually had a cider dinner at the Highland Inn we were talking about earlier. And that was our dessert cider, which we paired with, I think it was an apple crisp or something. Very good. But every glass you poured, because this was the unpasteurized cider, a little mousse to it, and it was just, really picked it up on your tongue quite a bit.
So Rhea just called out our apple scale on the labels, and I think it's worth saying that that's something that we think is really cool and something that we do on all of our cider. You'll turn that one around. So
you have a scale on that too?
Yes.
Right.
Every label has that.
Brilliant.
The dry to sweet scale.
Mm-hmm.
So that it's really, we try and make it accessible to someone. And like if they go into the market, like one of the markets that we're in, let's say they go into Foods of All Nations in Charlottesville, and the Frankie the winemonger isn't there.
The winemonger. Who are these people? Jesus,
Frankie
sounds like
Tom,
you're in like the north end of Boston here.
Yeah, like
Frankie the winemonger.
And, they like run the wine cave in this funny little like international grocery that we're in Charlottesville.
No kidding.
As a for instance, if they're not there and they can't tell you about these ciders because they know their stuff, but they're not always there. And you can turn it around and you can say, okay, I like a dry cider, and you can go, oh, these are dry.
Yeah.
Or I don't like dry. Yeah. I'm going to go for this one that's sweeter, like the Churchill Blush.
Brilliant.
Or the Fireside. And so it's just, it makes it accessible outside of our tasting room. And that's something that we pride ourselves on.
Yeah. And it's a fun little scale because they have an apple that's moving back and forth on the scale. So we have some photos of that. People will be able to see that in the show notes for sure. Keep up the good work at Big Fish Cider Company. I'm really impressed. It's such a privilege to be able to sit down and have this conversation with you.
Well, thank you, Rhea.
Thank you so much.
You can see photos from this recording and the show notes at ciderchat.com. This is episode 124. Although it wasn't mentioned during this conversation, Big Fish Cider Company is part of the Cider Going Up campaign at Patreon. So a big tip of the glass to both Kurt and Sarah and the good people down in Monterey, Virginia, who are helping to pick those apples and keep cider alive and going up. And I also want to give a tip of the glass to all the good folks who help this podcast each month via the Cider Chat Patreon page, and those commercial cideries too, such as Current Cider, We've been seeing a bit of posting there from the cider maker, Joe Getz, on social media. Looking good, Joe. Also, Ramborn Cider Company in Luxembourg. There's going to be a chat coming up with Carlos soon. And also, NMR Services, based in Danbury, Connecticut, doing analysis of a cider. There'll be a podcast coming up on that shortly. And Ross on Wye, based in Ross on Wye in the West Country of the UK. I'm just slurping it all up, thinking about it. Making me thirsty, so I'm going to have to get myself a bottle of cider soon. But before I do, I want to give a big thank you to Iron Bark Cider Works, and that's based in Claremont, California, who made a donation to Cider Chat this week. A big thank you to Kat and the team there. This cidery is based in Claremont, California. They have a tasting room. It's a lovely college town, I think I would call it. And there's some beautiful mountain and hiking in the area. A nice little stop in if you're flying into Ontario or Palm Springs and then heading west to LA. Definitely make a stop there. It was nice to hear that Kat finds a lot of good value in this podcast and considers it an excellent platform where all the posts are so relevant to their growing business. Thank you very much and a big tip of the glass. Well, before I get that bottle and open it up, I'm going to be making one more reminder to you to reach out to five people that you know need to know about that Normandy Cider Tour coming up this September. I'm counting on you, Ciderville, to get the word out so we keep cider going up around the world. In the meanwhile, I'm going to start rolling out of here. This is Rio Windcaller signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
Going up, going up.
Yeehaw!